The following program, The Kitchen Table Progressives, is sponsored by The Kitchen Table Progressives and to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
Welcome to another edition of Kitchen Table Progressive. Paul Richardson here, inviting you to join us around the table for an hour of casual conversation on law, civics, and politics, driving the current issues, where the menu is progressive and the table manners are unapologetically liberal. Easy for me to say. It was a new way to church this morning, this fine Sunday morning. When I passed the back alley behind P.T. O'Malley's pub. And there was a couple of leprechauns, Patty and Mike, who looked like they were drunk as a couple of skunks beating each other's brains in, you see. And then P.T. O'Malley comes out, picks the boys up by a scruff of their collars and says, "Now what's this all about, boys? What's it all about?" And he set them down and they said, "Well, you know, it's all about..." And he said, "Whoa, that's a complicated question." He says, "The only way you're going to get the answer to that, boys, is you're going to have to go off to the convent and ask the Mother Superior." So, Patty and Mike grab each other each by the ear and haul each other off to the convent, and they knock on the door. Bum, 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 bum. And Mother Superior opens the door, and she looks out and doesn't see anything, and she's about to close the door, and Mikey says, "Hey, down here, down here." She says, "Oh, there you are, down there, boys. Yes, what can I do for you?" And Mikey says, "Mother, are there any wee nuns here in the convent?" And she said, "Wee nuns? No, no, I don't know wee nuns in here, no." And Patty says, "Well, what about in the Vatican? Are there any wee nuns in the Vatican?" And Mother Superior said, I don't think there are any wee nuns in the Vatican, no, not that I know of, not that I know of, no. So then Mikey says, "Well, Mother, are there any wee nuns anywhere in the whole world?" And the mother thinks about it. She says, "No, I don't think there are any wee nuns anywhere in the whole world. No, I don't." And Mikey says, "See there, Patty, I told you. You've been doing a penguin." That's right. Mikey's been dating a penguin. Patty's been dating a penguin. Anyway, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And they say don't do jokes on the radio. Well, I don't need a laugh track. I mean, I just like the joke. I just like the joke anyway. So, happy St. Patrick's Day. I hope you're enjoying yourself. Some of the great Irish contributors from Ireland. We would have, of course, the great Irish poet, William Butler Yeats, the greatest Irish poet of all time. And the authors Oscar Wilde and James Joyce. Oscar Wilde, of course, was the one who coined the phrase, the cynic is the man who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. That would be Oscar Wilde. And, of course, James Joyce, what an author. I mean, really, I would say... I don't know if he was the father of modernism, but a great contributor to modernist literature. His novel, Ulysses, has to be one of the all-time most bizarre novels of all time. Honest, really. One of the all-time most bizarre novels of all time. It was banned in the United States. It was banned in the United States for being, get this, obscene. And there was nothing really other than it being weird. The obscene part was... the last few pages of the last chapter. It was his wife, after this whole thing. The whole book is about Mr. Leopold Bloom on June 5th, 1905. It was just the day in the life of what he did. It was called Ulysses because, of course, Ulysses, or Odysseus in the Greek, was gone for 20 years. Right? That's the old Greek story. of Tales of Brave Ulysses or Great Odysseus. He was gone for 20 years, 10 years off to the Trojan Wars, and then he was off trying to get home. He was gone another 10 years, waylaid by the one thing after another. Well, Leopold Bloom got up early, 6 o'clock one morning, on the morning of June 5th, 1905, and he went down to the butcher shop and got him a kidney, himself a kidney, came back and sizzled up in his frying pan and ate breakfast. Then he was off to a funeral, and then it was a bizarre book. It was totally bizarre. And the weird thing was that each chapter was written in a different style. And I thought I was going crazy reading it. I really did. I thought, I can't follow this at all. And then I started to read more about it, sort of look things up about it. I went, oh, okay. I'm not crazy. This is the way it is. But, and of course, a great musician, James Galway, the great flautist, Irish flautist. I'm sure there are lots more, but here's to the Irish and Erin Go Brawless. Erin Go Brawless. You know,
blank.
Are we being sandbagged in this country? I'm telling you. Okay, so now I'm off. I'm done with my Irish St. Paddy's Day introduction. But we're being sandbagged by our courts and the Justice Department. We're being made to think that there's some justice going on here. And this is just this justice system is a ringer for Donald Trump. I mean, look at the cases this week. Can you believe this? Donald Trump was facing 91 criminal counts. He's been found liable in all three civil cases that he's faced. First, it was, there was the E. Jean Carroll defamation case, $5 million, and he was found liable. He was proven to be both a rapist and a slanderer in that case. The jury awarded him $5 million earlier in January this year. He defamed her again. He keeps defaming her, but they awarded him $83.3 million to E. Jean Carroll. He was found liable for fraud. He's a sexual assaulter. He's a rapist, a slanderer, and a fraud. These are things now proved. They have now been proven in court. These are civil cases, but that doesn't mean it any less. It just means that the standard of proof is less, but the penalty is less, too. In civil cases, there's no jail time. There are liabilities. There are monetary, financial liabilities for that. But it was proved to the satisfaction of civil law, which is preponderance of the evidence, that Donald Trump and the judge in that case said he did rape her. He raped her. I'm sorry, but he's as guilty of rape. Anybody who doesn't think that O.J. Simpson was guilty of murder, Donald Trump's as guilty of rape as O.J. Simpson is of murder. There's no question about that. O.J. Simpson at least beat the criminal charges. At least he stood up. At least he made it through the criminal phase and was heard in criminal court. But what's happened this week, 91 counts of criminal counts, we're not going to hear any of them. I remember Richard Nixon, remember what he said? He says, the American people have got to know whether their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. Well, he turned out that he was a crook because he accepted a pardon from Gerald Ford. And in order to, if you accept a pardon, that's an admission of guilt. But I think he was right. We have a right to know. The people have a right to a fair and speedy trial, too, not just the defendant. And we're going to go into an election where there are, yes, not 91 criminal counts, now 85 criminal counts, because the judge down in the Georgia case, the state court case in Georgia, dismissed 6 of those counts, of the 40-some counts. So now we're down to 85, only 85. But we're not. It's the way this is going. The court system is blocking for him. They are running interference for Donald Trump. There's no question about it. Okay, let's look at the cases. All four of them. In all four cases, we are not going to know the outcome of any of them. Okay, so
this week on the program, Robert Herr hearings.
Oh, let me just start with this. The Robert Herr hearings, the special counsel who was investigating whether or not President Biden illegally took classified documents within his possession. Okay, so this case, he wrote a report that said Biden was basically, stodgy old, old man, old feeble old man without losing his memory. And then what the hearings revealed, what the Democrats revealed in these hearings is that the transcript that came from the interview with President Biden, because that's how the report was written, based on the transcript. The transcript and the report don't match. The report is not an accurate representation of the transcript. And as a matter of fact, I think the one thing I thought was most notable is that Robert Herr in the transcript of the conversation said to President Biden, "So you have almost a photographic memory of things." He was saying that President Biden has such a sharp memory, unbelievable, photographic. And then what happens in the report? He writes that I wouldn't charge this guy because he's too feeble minded. But it's like, well, that's not your decision. If there's something to charge, charge it. You leave it up to the defense to say that my client is too feeble minded to stand trial. I mean, this is outrageous. And the Justice Department, our great Merrick Garland, our Attorney General, who, by the way, needs to go. He needs to go. Merrick Garland will not serve. When President Biden wins again, Merrick Garland, we have to make sure, is gone. Call your representatives in Congress. Call the White House hotline, which I think is 202-456-1111, 202-456-1111. You can call that after 11 a.m. and tell him, nope, Merrick Garland, out of here. He's been the worst attorney general imaginable. Absolutely terrible. He allowed Robert Herr to publish. Actually, Merrick Garland published it. This inaccurate, that didn't even match the transcripts. It did not show. The interviews of the transcript shows that that's not what Robert Herr got from President Biden, was a stodgy, feeble old man. Not at all. He said, a man with a near photographic memory. Yeah. Isn't that something? So that's the first thing. Okay. Then we are on to
federal courts, D.C. case on hold for immunity.
The D.C. case, this January 6th case that Jack Smith is prosecuting. That he's prosecuting two cases. But the D.C. case about January 6th, this is on hold because we're still talking about whether or not Donald Trump has immunity. The Supreme Court is sitting on this case until April 22nd. Until April 22nd. Then they're going to tell us, or they're going to hear the arguments, but they're not going to tell us anything, if at all, until the end of June. And they might not tell us then. They don't have to. There's the question of the D.C. Circuit Court has already ruled unanimously. The panel of three judges already unanimously ruled that Donald Trump does not have immunity. In fact, they said that the president may have immunity in some regard within the duties, the scope of the duties of his office, but former President Trump was way outside the scope of his duties. Yeah, and I kept asking, when he what? He was outside the scope of his duties when he what? You mean incited an insurrection? Oh, okay. Nobody wants to say that word, right? We don't consider that. When the Supreme Court made the ruling, their per curiam shadow ruling, last week, that Oh, Colorado, no, you can't take them off the ballot. They didn't publish the holding. They didn't publish the dicta, the arguments, or the majority opinion and concurrences or the dissents. No, they don't do those in shadow rulings. No, so we don't get to know. We don't get to know what their rationale was. They just know. They just come down and, oh, and it was per curiam. It was 9-0. 9-0 means what? 9-0 is just that, no, we're not going to take them off the ballot. But we don't really know why. We don't know what the rationale was. So, but now they're on hold. The immunity, the D.C. case is on hold for whether or not Donald Trump is immune from prosecution. It's ridiculous. Okay, we'll keep these. We'll come back to this in just a minute. And we'll take your calls here at 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. It's just, we're being sandbagged here. I'm just annoyed. I'm annoyed. Okay, we'll be right back.
In a Marine to a civilian was very hard. I lost my purpose. I lost the drive that I had. That is a very dark and lonely place to be. It took me surrendering to myself to get the help that I needed. At my very first Wounded Warrior Project event, I met Ray Pizarro. He told me you need to have the courage to forgive yourself for the things you've done in the past. I got it tattooed on my hand. One night, my depression kept telling me, we can end this. And just before I was about to pull the trigger, I looked down at my hand, and that's what saved my life that night. That was the beginning of my incredible journey with the Wounded Warrior Project.
See how we help warriors combat stigma at woundedwarriorproject.org/combatstigma.
What's one of your favorite memories?
That's a tough question. Well, there was this one time I went camping with my parents in a forest back when I was maybe like 8 or 9. And I can remember one night we were laying out in our hammocks and we were just, you know, watching the trees rustling in the wind above us, and we could hear the sounds of the forest all around us. Frogs singing and owls calling and the creek running nearby. It was amazing. It felt like we were a part of it all. I don't know if I do it justice trying to describe it, but I'll definitely never forget it.
Most of us have a memory of being in nature we'll never forget. Let's protect the world's natural places so more memories can be made for generations to come. Visit worldwildlife.org.
All right, back we are then here on Kitchen Table Progressive for St. Patty's Day 2024. Oh, and by the way, I didn't tell you what happened in church. I only told you what happened on the way to church. But this morning in church, Father O'Brien, he gave a wonderful homily. Just wonderful. But, you know, Sister Mary Clancy, she was sitting in the back pew with her head down, looking sad for all the world. And after service, Father O'Brien came to her and said, Sister Mary, you're looking so forlorn. What's the problem? And she said, Father, it's Seamus. Seamus is dead. Father O'Brien said, oh, Seamus is dead. It's a pity. Were there any last words? And Mary Clancy said, yes, I think he said, Mary, put the gun down. Those are the last words. Those are Seamus's last words. Okay. Let's get to our calls here. We got Jim on the line. Jim?
Hi, Paul. Real quick story about Ireland. My brother ran out of gas. It was 5 o'clock in the morning outside of Dublin, right?
Yeah.
He's looking around. He's standing by the car. And he's looking around. Anyway, an Irish guy comes walking up the road. And he looks at me tired. He goes, "Boy, you think you got trouble? I was supposed to be home at 9 o'clock last night." I got so many great. I got relatives that have dual citizenship in Ireland. I went to the track with a priest. You know what his betting plate was for 25 years, an Irish priest? Father IRA.
What's that?
That was his plate. That was his plate.
Oh, really?
Father IRA. Oh, yeah. He was. In fact, I was at a luncheon when Mountbatten was assassinated on the Irish Sea, and he had come back. We just got back from Ireland, and the priests are looking at him like, "What do you have anything to do with this, then?" But anyway, let's go to Roosevelt, 1937.
Yeah.
He's sitting in his meeting. He's going, "We've got seven Republican lawyers in the Supreme Court. What are we going to do about it?" So his cabinet suggests this and that, and he kind of fumbled the ball on that one because he wasn't, they were up in arms that how is he going to change the Supreme Court? This is crazy. But he did suggest a couple of people to put on. But this is the same exact thing, the same thing we have today. We've got seven Republican lawyers in robes.
Yeah, right.
And let's face it, the Federalist Society and the rest of these law schools are, trying to steer us into the Republican Party. But the thing that gets me is this religious bent that they have. If you go to the red states and you say, "Well, you vote Democratic," we can't. It's a sin. It's a mortal sin if we vote Democratic. They've got them convinced that the Republican Party is on high. Almighty God.
I think they're more convinced. They've convinced their base not so much that the Republicans are. Beyond reproach, but the Democrats are evil. I've had debates with people here in Seattle where I've said, "So, I mean, come on." And this is going back to Bush, George W. Bush, and I've said to one guy, John Carlson, I said, "I've been debating you with John for now it's been over 30 years," and I said, "So now you're on to Trump." I said, "Donald Trump is nothing like Ronald Reagan. So were you lying to me then, or are you lying to me now?" And all he ever says is, "Better than a Democrat. It's just anything's better than a Democrat."
Yeah, absolutely. And when you flesh it out, you almost have to deprogram these people. Especially with the internet, especially with the advance of the internet, because now they have every conspiracy theory and outrageous bunk
to tell you. Yeah, and they say Democrats. They say cause Democrats, and it's just, right. They just keep doing. They get into a cult frenzy with the name calling, and they're not anywhere near focused on. They don't have anything to. They don't think about issues of any kind at all. It's just a name calling thing, and so they get into a frenzy. That's part of cultism, is being a frenzy. I mean, the fact that Donald Trump, they know that he's absolutely awful, and then yet they come up with this, "Oh, he's our King Cyrus," or some crap from the Bible where, some pagan, whether it was Nebuchadnezzar
they call them everything, David and everything else. But here's what gets me, just the party itself. Let's forget about Trump. Yeah. William Buckley was probably their number one conservative. Remember William Buckley back in the old days?
Yeah, William Buckley.
And,
yeah.
And then George Will picked up the football a little bit. He was on TV. Mm-hmm. Convincing the conservatives is the right way to go, that the deficit, there's always a deficit. In the meantime, they explode the deficit every time they get their hands on it.
Right.
But that's what they say. You'll keep the Democrats away from the deficit because they might do something for the poor, or they might do something to give us the minimum wage, or they might, these are terrible things, by the way. you know, and give us health insurance. You know, then they call us lefty. I don't even know what that means, Paul. To me, I voted Democrat all my life.
Yeah, me too.
In the 70s, and my whole family, we're Irish Catholics, and we're automatic Democrats. What's happened over the last 15 years, I have no idea. But nobody in my family ever voted really Republican. But I never felt like I was voting lefty. They threw communism around in the 30s, 20s, and 30s. That's how Hitler got into power. And the Republicans always, with McCarthy, they're always throwing communism around and socialism and all that other baloney. But in the meantime, what about Social Security, Medicare? What about expanding health care, unions, and so on? I mean, is that a leftist? I don't see that as a leftist, a communist, Karl Marx. I call these stations, I'll say, Karl Marx, you're with Marx. I say, which Marx? Harpo Marx or Groucho Marx?
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Well,
I don't even know what they're talking about.
These people who talk, they talk Karl Marx, and they don't know, they have no idea what they're talking about. And I've asked people, oh, okay, so which of Marx's writings have you read? And they say, well, what? You see, because they don't know that actually Karl Marx didn't write the Communist Manifesto. He co-wrote it. But Karl Marx wrote A Capital. And that was a critique of capitalism, and it is like it's volumes. It's 10 volumes. It's a huge work. No, and these people have never read that.
Yeah. That's like trying to read James Joyce around the clock. You know, you need a doctorate to read them.
You do. Well, that's what. Matter of fact, that's what somebody. Would study. You'd get your PhD in economics. You would have. That's what your PhD would have been: is to thoroughly read and analyze A Capital. That's a huge, expansive work, and you know it's not flawless, but it is to this day the only legitimate critique of capitalism. And these people talk, oh, Karl Marx is Marxism is all. It's a buzzword. They don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about when they say socialism either.
What about John Maynard Keynes? John Maynard Keynes was Roosevelt's guru, economic guru, and he would. And when he tried to pull back and try to balance the budget, that caused another disaster in America. And Keynes said, "Don't do that. Just keep priming the pump." But it was handed off to Kennedy. John Kenneth Galbraith was another economist that was in that vein, and that's what ran the country from the '60s. To the 70s, and we had a fabulous economy.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah.
So, I mean, eventually I vote Democratic. I mean, I wouldn't even dream of voting Republican, but to think that it's a mortal sin to vote for a Democrat is absurd. That's all.
The Roosevelt economy grew in the 12 years Roosevelt was actually in office before he died. So he took office in 1933, died in April 12th, 1945. But yeah, the economy grew at an average of 8.1%. It just stormed. And then after he died, there was a recession. But the Republican presidents, Eisenhower didn't have a great economy. And then the Kennedy and Johnson years, they had an average growth of about 5.1%. I mean, the 60s were booming, too.
They were booming. Yep. They were booming. Into the 70s were booming. I mean, I went to college, honest to goodness, for peanuts. I mean, I went to the same college, and that's what they're paying, and the kids said $30,000. I used to go there with, this is no baloney, I'd get it from the bank, $1,200, and the guy would say to me, how much do you need for the track, Jim? I said, $200. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, those were the good old days. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
But the vote, but anyway, I think we can beat Trump. I we can't beat Trump. I don't know. You know, I hope he has a fit, and I hope he has a fit, and his followers say it's a fix. I can't wait. I can't wait for that. Because they're
the fix is for him right now. What's the fix is in right now for him. So we're going to be
with the court.
We all know that when he loses, we're going to be back. But here's the thing: is that the risk is he's got the courts on his side, and they are going to find some way. If it's within snatching distance, they will snatch it away from us. That's the thing. It'll be some stupid ruling. Well, they will throw out some votes or say, oh, no, those were unconstitutional. That's the kind of court that we have to play here. And
they own their seats, they own the bad decision, because if Clinton wins, they're out of luck, they're out of gas, and that's what the Republicans were so relieved when Clinton lost, because they knew that I'm talking about the ones that are in higher positions. I'm talking about the average person. They knew that they could ram roughshod over the economy and the political situation.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got that call. Anyway, Paulie, you have a good week, and thanks for taking my call, Bill. Thank you.
Sure, you bet. Thanks, Jim. I always love to hear from you. Yeah, it's the fix is in. The fix is in for Trump right now, and so I'll go back to these cases here that I'm talking about. So we just talked about the D.C. case. We're still on hold while the Supreme Court sits on their butts and thinks about whether or not Trump's immune from prosecution in that case. And by the way, I think they will notch out. They will notch out a way to do it. They won't consider whether or not anything was this insurrection was part of his official duties or not. What they're going to do is use their ruling in the Colorado case when they said that Colorado doesn't have the power to decide that there was an insurrection. Only Congress has the power to decide whether or not this was an insurrection. And since Congress didn't declare an insurrection, well, by extension, they're going to say, since there was no insurrection, hey, no harm, no foul. Then they're going to say, you can't prosecute Trump. I bet you that's what they're going to come up with. Now, the other theory is that they'll just let it go and they'll sit on it and maybe give it to us by the end of June. In which case, that case will still be delayed because it's suspended, and Trump has several more months. His team has several more months to research the defense. So that's not going to happen by the election, if at all. Okay, then we have the espionage case in Florida. That was an espionage case. Well, this alien cannon, this Trump picked judge, just said that when Trump asked for immunity, she said, I'm not going to rule on that now, but that's something that you might want to bring up at trial. And this is, she's a crook. She's a damn crook. Because if she rules at trial, well, I mean, this is clearly a pre-trial. Why would you bring it up at trial? Immunity. So they can argue about it? No, this is a pre-trial. This is a pre-trial issue. Why go to trial if she hasn't set a trial date? Here's the other thing: is that she asked the parties, when do you want to go to trial? And the Trump team said August 15th. Jack Smith said July 15th. And rather than splitting the difference and saying okay, August 1st, she said, "Oh, I don't think those are workable." Wait, they both agreed. They were within a month of each other. She could have split the difference. She said, "Oh, I don't think those," and still has not set a date. And then tells the Trump team, "Well, I'm not going to rule on your immunity now. Just bring it up at trial." And see, here's the deal: is that if you bring it up at trial, the clock for what's called double jeopardy begins when a jury is seated. So once the jury is seated, and then she rules immunity, it can't be appealed because you can't, that's double jeopardy. You can't try somebody twice for the same crime. So once the jury is seated, she took a pretrial motion and said, bring this up at trial. She's a crook. She's a damn crook, and she's in his pocket, no doubt. And I hope Jack Smith files the 11th Circuit Court to have her removed from the case. Okay, so that's the two federal cases. Those are wiped off, right? We're not going to hear those before the election. Okay, then we have the New York campaign finance case, the so-called hush money case. I'll get to that one after the break. But that's almost as infuriating as the other two. So we'll get back to these in after the break. So still take your calls at 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Avina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. I love gymnastics, piano, public speaking, and riding on the trail bike with my dad. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Your donation will help ensure a brighter future for blind children and adults. Just call 855-659-9314. That's 855-659-9314. Or visit carshelpingtheblind.org. That's carshelpingtheblind.org. We will arrange to have the donated vehicle picked up and provide you with a tax deductible receipt. And if you know someone who is blind that can use our help, email nfb@nfb.org.
Blindness does not hold me back at all. Donate today.
A gentle breeze blows across your face as you take a refreshing sip of water, appreciating the stillness of another morning fishing on the lake. The distant gurgle of a stream reminds you of days spent playing in the creek, the cool, clear water rushing between your toes. You love this time with nature, the feeling of putting everything on hold to connect with the world around you. Now, imagine it's all gone. No fish, no lake, no water. One of life's most vital resources, irreplaceably depleted. Time is running out to protect fresh water, and without our love, it can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our fresh water. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
All right, I'm back with you for the last segment here on Kitchen Table Progressive for St. Patrick's Day on Sunday, March 17th, 2024. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And spring is right around the corner. It actually comes in a bit early this year. It comes in on Tuesday, on the 19th. So usually it comes in on the 20th sometime, but I think it comes in very, very late on Tuesday the 19th, probably towards the end of the day, the way the equinox comes in. It's like a, normally the 21st, March 21st is the first full day of spring. I guess it can come in. Yeah, I think it's the first full day of spring. Usually comes in sometime on the 20th. I think it's about a 24-hour waiver that can come in late on the 19th, which it is this year. And Easter is early this year. So if spring comes in on Tuesday, and then Easter is 2 weeks from today. Yeah, this is the 17th, so 2 weeks from today. And by the way, do you know how Easter is calculated, how they figure out when Easter is? So Easter is the Sunday after the first full moon of the spring equinox. The Sunday after the first full moon of the spring equinox. So, theoretically, what is the earliest date that Easter could be, theoretically? Well, I suppose, and of course, it would be very chancy. Okay, so for instance, this year, Easter comes in early on the 19th. So there could be a full moon on the 19th. But let's say the 19th was a Saturday. If the 19th was a Friday, then the 20th and the full moon were on the night of the 19th. Then the 20th would be the first full day of the equinox, and the full moon would have been on the 20th. So Easter, theoretically, the earliest Easter would be, or could be, March 21st. I always thought it was the 22nd, and then I realized, oh, wait, if the equinox comes in here on the 19th, if the 19th were a Friday, then the 20th would be the first full day of spring, and if that full moon were on the 19th or the 20th, then the 21st would be the first Sunday. So that's interesting. Actually, you know, we've had in recent times, we did have in 2008, we had Easter on March 23rd, the earliest Easter that you and I will ever see. Now, the last time Easter was on March 23rd was in 1814, and it won't be that early again for about another 280 years, I guess, something like that. It's very odd, just the way it goes. But we will have Easter. The latest date of Easter is April 25th, and that's coming up in about, I think, in 2038. I looked these things up, and I think it's 2038, so maybe I'll still be around for that. I don't know. Okay, so, yep, Easter's around the corner, and spring, and hopefully, you know, we'll probably get a foot of snow in between all of this and that and the other thing. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, early spring is just, well, you know, they say March, in like a lion, out like a lamb. I'm ready for it to be out like a lamb. Anyway. Okay, so back to our cases. We have now going to the state court. So we covered the federal cases, the Jack Smith case in D.C. That's on hold while the Supreme Court thinks about whether Trump has immunity. And then they call it the documents case, but the espionage, the stolen documents case that Trump stole from and took to Mar-a-Lago after he was president. You know, so this isn't presidential privilege. He wasn't president anymore. Judge Aileen Luce Cannon is going to delay the ruling. And so, see, Jack Smith cannot appeal because he won. He essentially, there's nothing for him to appeal. She says she'll rule later. She said she encouraged the Trump team to bring this up at trial, but she hasn't set a trial date yet. So fat chance we're going to hear anything from any of these two federal cases before the election. And now we move on to the state cases. Well, the campaign finance so-called hush money case or slash hush money case in New York State with the district attorney Alvin Bragg, that was supposed to begin a week from tomorrow on the 25th of March. Well, that's not going to happen because the Southern District of New York, which is the federal prosecutor's body, just came up with some documents that Alvin Bragg had requested about a year ago. And so provided these to the Trump team, and now, you see, you have to share all the evidence, inculpatory or evidence against the defendant, and exculpatory evidence that would be, you know, would be on the defendant's favor. You have to share it all. And then you have to give them time to go over it. So District Attorney Alvin Bragg is going to delay this case at least 30 days. So not March 25th, April 25th, or probably May before this gets started at the earliest. And see, every time these get pushed off, then it makes it's kind of like every time one of these gets pushed down the road, it makes another crunch in conflict with the other. The guy's in so much trouble. He's got conflicts with the courts. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think they should. I don't think that they should make way for, do you have another case? No. Hire another set of lawyers. I mean, if that's how much trouble you're in, too bad. Too damn bad. I mean, this is what he got himself into. It's like, can we all make room for each other? No. Let we the people have as much right to a fair and speedy trial as the defendant does. You know, under the Sixth Amendment says a fair and speedy trial in the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. That's not just for the defendant's sake. And by the way, Donald Trump is out on bail. Does this mean he's out? His bail is last indefinitely? No, I think if you want an extension, in most cases, if you're up for murder, they'd say, yeah, you can have an extension, but you're going to spend the time in jail. Your bail doesn't last indefinitely. You don't get to delay for year after year after year while you run free on bail. That's what he's getting. That's what he's getting out of it. He's getting the courts are making way for him. That's what they're doing. I guarantee you, when he says, I'm being indicted for you, and he's black people, he's all for black people now. I'll guarantee you, there ain't any brothers of color that are brothers and sisters of color going to get this kind of consideration. Uh-uh. None of us would. No way. There's just no way. So Eileen Cannon has told him that bring us up at trial, and then what will happen is if she finds in favor of Trump and saying, you have immunity, then that's the end of that trial. You can't try him again. That trial's over. She just made a judgment as a matter of law. There's no more trying him. That's it. So,
Georgia RICO case.
And then we have the case in Georgia where Fani Willis's personal life has been on trial. This one is just an embarrassment. Georgia is an embarrassment as far as I'm concerned. The state of Georgia is an embarrassment. They have been for a very long time. But we all know about District Attorney Fani Willis was accused by the Trump team of having a conflict of interest because of a personal relationship with fellow team prosecutor Nathan Wade. Well, first of all, nobody. I don't see how that's a conflict of interest. If she's involved with someone on her own team, that's not a conflict of interest. So why does the Trump team have standing in this case? Now, you could say, no, she should. If she was in a personal relationship with him, she shouldn't have hired him. That's nepotism. But that's not the Trump's. That's not who has standing in that is Fulton County. Whoever her boss is. Say, wait a minute, you hired him? But that nobody did. Nobody filed a complaint. So standing is three things: injury or damage, causation, and remedy. So how does Donald Trump have injury or damage because she's involved with Nathan Wade? Let's say she is. She doesn't. And what's the causation? There's no causation. And by the way, what's the remedy? Well, here's what they do. They came up with a remedy. Okay, the Atlanta, Fulton County, Georgia could say, we don't want nepotism in our, you can't hire him and you're giving him something just because he's a personal friend. Oh, as if that doesn't happen ever, does it? But anyway, what they decided, this judge said to the Trump team, who should have never had standing, you haven't proven your case. You have not proven your case that there's a conflict of interest, but the Willis team will have to give up something. They will have, but the Willis team, Nathan Wade will have to leave. Either she or Nathan Wade will have to leave the team, the prosecution team. That's like, wait, what? You didn't prove your case. Trump didn't prove their case. But the prosecution has to give something up. Oh, because he said it looks bad. No, what looks bad is making them give something up. That like says, well, no, something is wrong. Why are they being made to give something up if there's nothing wrong? If they didn't prove anything, it kind of reminds me of in one of my favorite parts of the Gospels is I don't know if it's my favorite part, but when Jesus goes before Pontius Pilate, and Pilate says, I find no guilt in this man. Have him flogged and released. I was like, well, wait. I thought you said no guilt. That's like going to the junior high school principal's office, right? You get whacked with the board anyway, right? Even though you didn't do anything wrong, just in case you did something wrong, yeah. No, that's they have to give something up because Trump didn't prove his case. The courts, all four of these courts, are running interference for Donald Trump, and we are not going to hear any of the criminal charges before the election. That's just sickening. That's sickening. We the people are there. The courts are standing in the way of our right to hear whether or not our president is a crook. And that's wrong. That should make you angry. It should make you furious. It definitely should make you get out and vote. And the only way we're going to fix this system is to get rid of a lot of these right wingers. The courts are stacked with right wingers. I was listening to, I think it was on MSNBC, it was one analyst, I can't remember who she was, but she said these federal judges that are put these rulings on abortion and mifepristone, these are people who were law clerks for some of these conservative Supreme Court justices like Clarence Thomas. They're law clerks, and then they go out and get their own lower level federal judge jobs. So the whole court is stacked up and down with all these right wingers. We need serious court reform. We really do. And part of what I went through this a little bit last week, but we have to have a code of ethics that Congress comes up with. We have to have something written to codify that the Senate cannot stonewall nominations of the president to say we're not going to take hearings. If the Senate, in my view, it should be written down that if the Senate does not convene confirmation hearings, they waive their right to advice and consent. They waive their power to advice and consent, and the president should just appoint whomever. We got to do something also about judges choosing when they're going to retire, when the right president is in office. You know, I think that we have to stop that too. That's not for up to them to decide. I'm going to retire. This is a lifetime appointment. You're appointed to this job. You basically get paid until you die. What a sweet deal, huh? You got a job that you will go, no matter if you don't want to, you don't have to quit. The only way you can be out of the job is if Congress impeaches you and removes you from office because either you're too dithery or whatever. And that has happened. We have had now 21 impeachments. Mayorkas was impeached, and 8 removals from office. And by the way, all 8 of those were federal judges. I think we need to impeach Clarence Thomas. I honestly do. We need to fire when we get a Democratic Congress. The next one has to fire an incendiary shot across the bow and let the courts know that we aren't going to take it anymore. They're not going to stonewall us and sandbag us and tell us that we can't have justice, a speedy trial. We the people don't get a speedy trial when we want to. That's what they have to know, is that we count too. Okay, well, that's it for today. Thanks for being with me, and I'll see you again next week. As always, join us again every Sunday at 6 p.m. immediately following the family meeting for Kitchen Table Progressive right here on AM 820 WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, where facts matter. And you can hear us at heartlandsignal.com.